And, of course, one of the all-time classics from Rod Stewart. And it leads us right into a discussion with Jake Halpern, who has a new book out called Fame Junkies, The Hidden Truth Behind America's Favorite Addiction. Welcome to the show, Jake. How are you today?
Great. Thanks for having me on, Paul.
My pleasure. Nice having you on. And I played some Rod Stewart there because in this book you write about people who are obsessed with fame, who are not themselves famous but desperately want to be next to famous people, including one woman so obsessed with Rod Stewart that she had a giant shrine to him in her house. You actually met this woman, right?
Yeah, in the book, not only do I meet her, but then we end up going on a pilgrimage out to Hollywood to meet Rod, because she actually nominated him to be on the Walk of Fame. And so she meets Rod, I meet Rod, the three of us together.
Was it creepy?
Sorry, say again, Paul.
Was it creepy?
You know, I posed that question to Rod Stewart. I said, this woman has got your shirt nailed up to her wall, a glass you once drank from. Do you find this at all weird? And without missing a beat, he said, you know, basically, the crazier they are about me, the better, which I thought kind of summed it up nicely. The fans need to worship and the celebrities need to be worshipped.
Absolutely. And people go into show business because they want people to pay attention to them and they want people to love them. But we've seen too many instances of that thin line between fanatical fan and dangerous stalker, haven't we?
Yeah, in fact, on that same trip to L.A., I visited the LAPD's Celebrity Anti-Stalking Unit.
They must be the only city in America that has a Celebrity Anti-Stalking Unit.
They do. You know, actually, one of the funniest things from that visit was, you know, they have all these classifications for the different types of stalkers there are, but one of the syndromes was the imaginary stalker syndrome, and that's where, like, a grade B or C celebrity makes up a story about having a stalker. And the detective explained to me this way. He said, well, I guess you're no one in Hollywood unless you have a stalker.
Wow.
That's sad.
But, of course, there are people at that level who are, you know, only minor celebrities. Like, who was that woman who was on that sitcom My Sister Sam?
Yeah, shot by, her name's escaping me. But
Rebecca something. I can't, you know, it's sad that I can't remember her name. But some fan was so obsessed with her that just killed her.
Yeah, that was actually and that's what gave birth to that Celebrity Anti-Stalking Unit. Yeah, because, you know, the funny thing is you go out to Beverly Hills, for example, and you buy one of those star maps, and you go to Brad Pitt's house, and there's six or seven white vans that are sitting outside the house, and these are all basically mini tour buses of people that are staking out his house, hoping that he'll come out the front door. And it is that fine line, because that's okay. But you can't jump over the fence, of course, into the backyard. But you could kind of see if it's all right to stake out in front, where exactly do you stand? And the whole line is being blurred.
What do these people want? And before you answer that, let me just preface it by saying, because I've done this a long time, I've met a lot of celebrities. I've gotten the good fortune of going backstage and meeting them. And I actually put good fortune in quotes because everybody thinks, ooh, you got to go backstage at a concert. Jake, you probably have experienced this yourself. Backstage at a concert is nothing all that exciting. You get to meet whoever it was you came to see that night for maybe 30 seconds. Hey, great show tonight. Thank you very much. And then they go to the next person in line. Maybe you can get them signed something, and that's about it. It's incredibly boring, and you end up having non-carbonated beverages and non-salty pretzels. That's pretty much what backstage at many concerts is like.
It's not,
you know, no, it's not like you get to go into their life at all. So when these people are, if not stalking, certainly being fanatical about celebrities, what is it that they want?
Well, I think that that they often have the illusion that they're going to become good friends or somehow, you know, into that orbit of acquaintances. I mean, most people have not been backstage. I mean, I remember the first time I went backstage, I interviewed The Edge, who's the guitarist for U2, and we had a phone interview, and he said, why don't you come backstage? And I was under this impression that it was going to be me backstage with The Edge and Bono kicking back.
Right.
And just as you described, you get back there, and there's more people backstage at a U2 concert than there are at most, you know, smaller venue concerts. Of like, there's like hundreds of people backstage.
Yes.
But I think that most people don't realize that. They have the sense that if they can just get on the other side of that velvet rope, life is going to be great. You know, in the book, I go to this thing called the Association of Celebrity Personal Assistants.
Oh, this is great. I love this part of the book.
And they actually have their own school set up where you can come and learn how to become an assistant. And when I was amazed, I enrolled in one of these classes, and the people that were coming to this were highly qualified. I met a guy from South Carolina that had his MBA, that was a vice president at a healthcare company. These are people who have the same kind of misconception, that if they could somehow become a celebrity assistant, that they're going to be privy to this world. And, of course, the only thing they're privy to is, you know, bringing, you know, groceries at 2 in the morning, you know, at the beck and call of the celebrity.
Jake Halpern's book is called Fame Junkies, The Hidden Truth Behind America's Favorite Addiction, here on the Paul Harris Show on KMOX. Let's talk about these celebrity assistants for a minute, because this was the most fascinating part of your book. Give examples of some of the more bizarre things that celebrities have made their assistants do, because in so many cases, it's the sort of thing where any normal person would go, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, I know. There was one of the crazier ones was the celebrity asked her assistant to contact the President of the United States and get their brother off of active duty in Iraq so they could attend her pre-Oscar party. I mean, what do you do when you get that request from up high?
Yeah. Did they try?
I guess they tried. You know, then there, of course, are the, you know, just the ones where the celebrity has got two rooms at the Waldorf or wherever, and at the end of the week, tells the assistant, oh, yeah, I left my dog in the other suite, and I forgot to clean up or feed him. Can you go and take care of that? And they open up the room, and, of course, there's dog poop everywhere. And so, you know, it's the glamour is not quite there.
Yeah, and you can't say no. If you're in this job, two things you can't say are no and I don't know, right?
Yeah. You know, one thing that's really interesting is I focus a lot in the book, too, about kids and their perspective on fame. And I surveyed about 700 middle school students. And I asked them, which of the professions would you most like to be when you grew up? You could be a U.S. senator, CEO of a Fortune 500 company, president of Harvard or Yale, or an assistant to a celebrity. And about half of girls in the survey picked assistant.
Oh.
It was three times more than the U.S. senator and times more than the CEO.
That's really scary.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that kids are getting this from a very early age, that not just fame, but proximity to fame is going to change your life.
Is it about reflected glory for many of these assistants?
I think so. I think that they're, I think it is. It is about somehow getting the scraps off the table, of getting some, you know, yeah, exactly, reflected light from their luminescence.
And do they also get freebies and perks that do make the job worthwhile?
They do. They fly first class and stay in nice hotels, and there are things that, I mean, there are some incentives, but, you know, not enough that after spending a fair amount of time in this world, I would ever want anyone I know to do it.
Are they even paid well?
No, that's another thing, too. The association does their own kind of survey of their members. The average pay is $55,000, which in Hollywood, in a job that you're on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, is pittance. And the other interesting thing about them is they're not young either. I mean, in terms of, you think they'd be kids right out of college, and they really tend to be about, the average age is 38, which is basically mid-career. And these jobs are not a stepping stone to something else. They are career-long jobs.
So somebody takes a job as somebody's assistant, and they work for that person for 20 years?
For a long time. They'll switch. You know, they'll do, one woman I profile, she did 5 years with Sharon Stone, 5 years with Dennis Hopper, and kind of, you know, you work for different stars but the same profession. And I asked another assistant, why is it that, you know, that they don't move on from assistanthood? And he said, think about it. If you are a celebrity and you have someone that gets everything right, takes out all the blue M&Ms, puts all the Snapples on the left side of the fridge, has the coffee ready at 7:17 every morning, why on earth would you risk wanting to give them a promotion to your production company and risk having someone else fill that job that might not get everything just so?
Boy.
But then pay them more.
They don't have to. The people want these jobs because they are desperately fame junkies.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. My story, my book actually opens in St. Louis. I should mention this to your listeners. And this is how I got sucked into this whole subject matter in the first place. I profiled this kid whose real name is Gerald Jones, whose actual like stage name is Jaquan. And he had a song called Tipsy that was a huge hit about 2 years ago. And I kind of followed his trajectory from when he was unknown, and as soon as he signs his record deal, of course, you know, tons of people are clamoring to be his assistant. And one of the more humorous things that happened was there was a kid whose name was Versatile. That was his street name, and about halfway through our stay, he said, I have a new name. Could you call me Four, F-O-U-R? And I said, yeah, sure, where'd that come from? And he said, well, Nelly, the rapper Nelly, has got an assistant named Three, so I've been renamed Four.
Oh, my gosh.
Is Jaquan one of Nelly's guys?
Jaquan is part of, well, yeah, he's one of, I think he's part of the outer circle of Nelly's friends that have come up under Nelly, yeah.
Wow, wow. Yeah, let's go back to the middle schoolers for a second, because you not only found that almost half of them want to be celebrity personal assistants, but you also asked them a question about an option in their life. You said, would you like to be stronger, smarter, famous, or more beautiful? What did the kids say?
Well, the boys picked intelligence. They picked fame, sorry, almost as much as intelligence. And the girls actually picked fame more often than intelligence. So, you know, and I guess the argument that I make in Fame Junkies is we all know that we live in a celebrity-obsessed society, but we tend to dismiss it as, well, it's harmless. You know, what's the harm? And when you have kids saying they'd rather be famous than smart, then I think there you have your answer.
Do you think that there are the next generation of celebrities or the next generation of celebrity assistants?
I think there are the next generation of very disappointed people.
Right? Yeah.
Meaning what?
Meaning that when they grow up and they don't become famous, or they don't become celebrity personal assistants, or they become celebrity personal assistants and they find it's not all that,
yeah,
that they're going to wonder, what on earth was I thinking, and what on earth was I being fed?
You know, and I wonder, too, if this leads to the attitudes that people have in our relationships and, you know, and in the workplace, that, you know, I'm just 5 seconds from being famous, so treat me like I'm famous already.
That's
and
right.
So people don't work hard enough. Does that make any sense to you, Jake?
No, it does. I mean, you hear a lot of this idea of the entitlement generation.
Yes.
The sense that people think they're destined for greatness. And there's a really interesting stat. They've been asking this question of kids since the 1950s. I am an important person. And back in the 50s, only 12% of kids said yes to that question, and today that number's up to 80%. So there's a sevenfold increase. And, you know, I just think it kind of reflects this idea that kids today think that they are destined for stardom, and that it's going to happen quickly, and that hard work is not even necessarily part of the equation.
Mm.
And I think the end result is obviously not good.
Yeah. That's one of the things I like about the book, Jake. You don't just go into the stories of the celebrities and their assistants and the wannabes, but you also talk about the psychology of being a fame junkie, which is one of the things that I thought was also terrific about the book. I appreciate your time today, and I know it's going to be a big bestseller, because it's about celebrities and their assistants and people who want to be them, and that's pretty much everybody in America right there.
That's great. Thanks for having me on the show, guys.
Jake Halpern, Fame Junkies, The Hidden Truths Behind America's Favorite Addiction. Here on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.